The gloves come off between former Mayor Alvin Brown and Congressman Al Lawson. A judge strikes down Florida's ban on allowing felons to vote, and a city council member takes on the Curry administration. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live on the radio at 9 and never miss a show. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or through our app. Just ahead, all of the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, today marks National Wear Red Day. It's a way to raise awareness in the fight against heart disease. Are you wearing your red today? Plus, Donna Deegan will be along later in the hour to talk about 26-2 with Donna. We'll tell you about that, too. All of that ahead this morning. But first, it's Friday and time to discuss a very busy news week here on the show as we welcome David Bauerlein, reporter for the Florida Times-Union. Hey, David.
Good morning.
Our own business analyst, John Burr, is here. Hey, John.
Yo.
Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal.
Yo. Good morning.
John is enjoying his retirement immensely. And our own regular...
I could just fall back to the good morning booth.
And our own regular contributor, Fred Matthews.
Good morning.
Guys, always great to see you. Thanks for being here. Lots to talk about this Friday. Everything from a judge yesterday striking down the state's ban that prevents felons from voting to progress on the city's pilot program on the opioid crisis. We'll talk about that, too, and more. But our top story this Friday, this week, former Jacksonville Mayor Alvin Brown surprised no one when he announced he was running against Congressman Al Lawson in the 5th District Democratic Congressional primary. Now, this move has been expected for months. Brown had been telling people he was only waiting for former Congresswoman Corrine Brown to leave the scene to announce. Now, of course, Corrine Brown went to prison earlier this week, so the field is now clear. And it didn't take long for the candidates to start taking shots at each other. Here is what Lawson said to Florida Public Radio after hearing Alvin Brown had entered the race.
The former mayor had been talking for months and going around to see people that he was going to run. You know, and he had been going around with Corrine Brown up in Washington, D.C. and other places trying to gather support. I think they're either cousins or good friends. You know, he's a guy who been looking for a job.
Okay, so Lawson basically saying that Alvin Brown is a cousin or a friend to Corrine Brown and that he's only running because he needs a job? Right? But Brown clapped back at Lawson after the conservative website The Daily Caller pointed out that Lawson was the only black lawmaker in Congress to applaud during President Trump's State of the Union address the other night. That's when Trump made a remark in his address about historically low levels about African-American unemployment. Brown jumped on Lawson, clapping for Trump, saying, and here's the quote, "It's deeply troubling that Al Lawson claps for the Trump agenda in Washington as people back home struggle to make ends meet. While the black jobless rate is at its lowest levels following President Obama's years of hard work, there remains more to be done." Now, Alvin Brown also nabbed the endorsement of a former chair of the Congressional Black Caucus this week. This despite the fact that Lawson said the CBC is backing him. So it looks like a spirited primary is underway here. We begin the hour with a closer look. What are your thoughts about former Mayor Alvin Brown throwing his hat in the ring to run for Congress? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Or weigh in on Facebook. And of course, these two men are running in the 5th Congressional District, which was redrawn. It goes from downtown Jacksonville west to Tallahassee. Tim Gibbons, let's begin with you. Al Lawson is a guy from Tallahassee. Alvin Brown, former Jacksonville mayor. This is going to be interesting.
It will be. Former Jacksonville mayor, and you know, depending on how you analyze it, the emphasis should be on, you know, Jacksonville mayor or former. Obviously, he wasn't able to get a second term. Does that mean that he has the support of Jacksonville or not? I think that's kind of an open question. I find the attack particularly interesting, though. I remember covering when Alvin Brown was running for mayor, and his campaign staff going insane whenever there was a Corinne Brown story, particularly something negative, and the headline would just be Brown. People get confused. And
they're not related. To be clear, they are not related.
They're not related, although you can probably find plenty of images of Alvin Brown working with Corinne Brown, because when he was mayor and she was in Congress, they were working on dredging. They were doing things together because they're people elected from this area. So, you know, I'm not sure if that's a fair attack on someone, but he did work with her. Of course he did.
Fred Matthews, Al Lawson is the incumbent. That's an advantage. At the same time, Alvin Brown, you can guarantee he's going to be running ads showing Lawson clapping for Donald Trump.
Make no doubt about it. This is great, isn't it? We finally got some real juicy politics to talk about for the next few months. This is going to be one of those races to watch, because we're looking at basically who's going to carry the agenda forward. There's a great deal of speculation that Lawson, even though he may be in the chair, may not be serving that long anyway. But who knows? But for Alvin Brown, it is his chance at a bit of redemption. It's a chance for him to carry out the things that he wasn't able to fully do in his second term as mayor. And he has a bit of an advantage in that he knows the terrain. I think here in Duval County, we got it comprises 56% or so of the voters in that district. Mm-hmm. And of those 56%, 75% of those, I think, are African-American within mm-hmm. the district here in Jacksonville. So he's got an opportunity to cash in. The question is whether or not Lawson will be able to really make the voters in this area feel that he's their congressman over the next few months. And that's going to be the challenge, because Alvin's going to hit hard.
Right. You know, what's interesting is the power establishment in Jacksonville don't really like Brown that much.
And they, by and large, they have worked well with Al Lawson.
And they have. But on the other hand, they want that seat controlled by a Jacksonville guy. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, whether some of the real power hitters hold their nose and support Brown. Because they want it. They want the Jacksonville emphasis on that, interesting, from that seat.
There's an interesting irony of the, Alvin Brown came into office in part because of the support of the Republican establishment,
right,
basically saying that, you know, he could be mayor. You have Lawson, who was shown around Jacksonville by Susie Wiles, who, you know, has worked for the Trump campaign. You have a certain weird nexus of the Republicans in Jacksonville and how they approach the seat that has traditionally been held by a Democrat. So you have Alvin Brown, who in some ways governed as a Republican, now attacking someone who's clapping for a Republican president. And there's a whole bunch of different lines here of you know, what you can pull out and attack.
And keep in mind, though, when Alvin Brown was mayor, Donald Trump was not president.
Right.
Now we have these guys running in this primary with a whole new factor, Trump presidency. David Bauerlein.
Well, that's absolutely true. And you look at Lawson and Alvin Brown, and it's hard to see that they have some big divergence on major issues.
Right.
That this is going to be some ideological campaign choice. Geography is going to be big. Location, location, location. Turnout, obviously, Alvin Brown, I think when he lost the mayor's race, but he ran really well in the parts of the city that fall within that congressional district.
And I don't believe Alvin Brown technically lives in the district, Fred. He lives in Arlington. Is that technically in the district? I mean, it doesn't matter. I don't think you legally have to, but
Well, I mean, it's got enough African-American population over there, folks who are aware of it. And, of course, everybody knows his name. Now, also remember now, this is the second time Alvin has run for this district seat. He ran against Corrine, about 15 years ago. It was, he learned a bit of a lesson about it. All we have to do on our end, though, is keep track of the Browns. We've got so many Browns we got to keep track of. This is not his first time running, although the district was much different than it is today. And, of course, we want to watch the money. What John just
mentioned. Can he raise the fundraising?
Are you channeling AG right now?
Yeah, Alvin can raise the money. The question is, we want to see where the money's coming from, because that's going to be a thing for Lawson. He's got to raise some money, and he's got to raise it from where? Where is it? We look at those campaign accounts to see where the money's coming from. We pretty much know where Alvin's going to get money from.
Jacksonville.
That's right, Jacksonville. And he has a nationwide network that he can still pull from.
That's correct.
Okay? Well, that's actually a question. I think it's going to be interesting. In some ways, the question is, does he still have that network? And that's why I find following the money interesting. It will be a sign of, does he still have that? You know, remember when he ran... for mayor the first time, Bill Clinton did a robocall for him. I mean, that's some amount of pull. I don't know if he still has it, but I'm not sure if a robocall from Bill Clinton does anything right now. But, you know, being in that circle.
But keep in mind, he that's why he took that adjunct professorship in Washington. You don't think he was just teaching school all day.
All right, let's go to some calls now as we talk about the biggest stories of the week here on the Friday Roundtable. Add your voice to the conversation at 549-2937. Clyde is on the north side. Hey, Clyde, happy Friday.
Hey, good morning. I'm calling in response to Mr. Brown looking for a job. Alvin Brown didn't support President Obama. Alvin Brown did not support Michelle Obama when she was here. He did not support Democratic candidates running for office, except one. That is the convicted felon, Kareem Brown. And his accomplishments are thin and few, including the no-bid contract for Eureka Gardens, which was subsequently voided by the feds. Alvin Brown does not have a lot of support in the Democratic Party. He will have an uphill battle. And I'll take my response or comments off the air.
Okay, thanks, Clyde. What about all of those points? And will voters remember all of those knocks against former Mayor Brown? David Bauerlein.
I'll say Tim mentioned that Alvin Brown governed in a way that could have been as a Republican, and had some Republicans who said they supported him because he did govern as a Republican. So it's a two-sided coin. On the one side, he did have a great turnout in historically Democratic neighborhoods, won those overwhelmingly, but he was not viewed as someone who built the Democratic Party in Duval County.
Right, right. You know, the caller's right. I mean, his record sitting in the mayor's office is not good. I mean, it's a very weak a list of accomplishments from Mayor Brown. So, you know, that's why I think a lot of people are just going to look at him running for Congress as, oh, great, you know. and they're not going to get excited about it. You know, Corinne Brown, for all her faults, and as we know, she's sitting in prison, so she had her faults. She was a very effective congresswoman. I mean, she brought a lot of stuff back here. I don't think Brown can do what Corinne Brown did.
Well, then, let's look at the record of his opponent, Al Lawson. What record is he going to run on?
That's the question, isn't it? And you know, because we can't just jump out there and name a bill that he had passed, even as a state senator. And that's going to be the thing. Both of them, this is a fairly even match. Now, we know the folks, at least in this media market, we pretty much know former Mayor Brown. And there are going to be a lot of knocks on him, just as the caller just said. Of course, from the black community standpoint, there's always going to be that thing that folks are going to bring up about, hey, he didn't meet the president when he came to town. Now, full disclosure, I had a chance to talk with Alvin Brown a few weeks ago about these same things. And he managed to find a few pictures of him and the president together. We'll see if he releases those pictures to sort of squell that, because that's going to be
that's the thing. That's what I found interesting when the caller mentioned that. That was like a I don't know, somewhere between a ironic joke and a just thing that people noticed. Whenever the Obamas came to town, Alvin Brown, you know, had to be in D.C. for the Conference of Mayors, or had to be somewhere. He was always out of town, and it was just
Jacksonville. It was something African American voters did not like,
well,
for sure.
For Jacksonville's first black mayor to not, you know, meet with America's first black president, that really rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. I'm sure he has pictures, but as, you know, his friend, in Jacksonville.
But will that make a difference in this primary? You know, we'll have to see. Let's go to David in Arlington. Hey, David.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, David.
I am a lifelong resident of Arlington. And a couple of years ago when they had the reapportionment thing, all of a sudden I'm voting for a man from Tallahassee. Well, I could never understand why they put Arlington with the rest of the district on the other side of the St. John's River when it could have been so much easier to put us with John Rutherford's district, which to me makes a heck of a lot more sense because we would all have been grouped together. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. And he brings up an important point that with redistricting, this is such a bizarrely shaped district, which will also factor into this congressional race in a strange way. You know, it's got two major Florida cities, Jacksonville and Tallahassee.
Welcome to gerrymandering.
Yes, exactly right.
That's exactly right. I mean, they put Arlington in there because Arlington has a significant black population.
And that's where we are. That's why we continue to have this discussion about racial politics and party politics become secondary to the Republican. This just goes back to 1992 when this business started. And the Republican began to control the House of Representatives and the Senate. And they carved out these districts up in North Florida and for the Cuban population down in Miami, Fort Lauderdale, that brought Ross Layton and all of them into power. And they did the same thing up here. And here we are. They were under some duress to line Corrine out of the district, but they had to keep it the same. So they carved out this ridiculous district that runs from Jacksonville to Tallahassee. I mean, But hey.
Speaking of racial politics, it was supposed to be a run-of-the-mill news conference with Mayor Lenny Curry joining some allies on the city council touting economic growth in the city, but Councilman Garrett Dennis had other ideas. Now, this event was held at the Soul Food Bistro. It's in Dennis's district, but he wasn't asked to participate to the event in his own district. So Dennis showed up early and held a press conference of his own, where he told reporters that a senior member of the mayor's staff called him a, quote, dead man walking, due to Dennis often clashing with the mayor's agenda. The mayor's office denies such a conversation took place. But Dennis says the city council should not simply be a rubber stamp for the mayor's office and must carefully review every ordinance that comes before them, regardless of what the administration wants. Dennis, one of the only members of council to routinely oppose the mayor's agenda. What do you think about this? Dennis says he's being bullied by Curry because he just doesn't always fall in line with what Curry wants. Give us a call, 549-2937. Tim Gibbons.
As well as the dead man walking comment, I believe he also said that he had gotten a concealed carry permit because he was afraid of what might happen, which is a interesting statement to see in a political dispute that somebody's packing heat, but I mean,
yeah,
obviously
really.
he does feel
serious. That seems a bit dramatic,
so just a little bit. But no, I mean, the council member has stood up against the mayor, and in some ways, I think the interesting thing here is the shock, shock that gambling occurred sort of thing from Casablanca, that, the mayor is pushing back on a council person who has pushed back against him. And this is grown-up politics. This is, elbows are going to be thrown. But that doesn't mean it's, the right way to behave in public. So,
well, the mayor going into this councilman's district, inviting all the other African American council members except this particular one.
He was sending a message.
Yeah. We're getting calls about this. Albert on the north side. Hi, Albert.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
I just want to piggyback on some of the opening that you came off with. It just seems that it's the totally wrong type of politics to play when you have a mayor who brings three or four council members to a district and not invite the district council person. It's a slap in the face to Councilman Dennis. I've known Councilman Dennis for several years. I know him to be a very, very strong and outspoken person. He has done wonders in his 4 years on that district in District 9. That District 9 needs a leader like him to come in and pay close attention to what's going on and to serve the needs of those people. And when you have a mayor who, if you don't follow along, he wants to attack you, I have a serious problem with that. You know, it doesn't show the type of leadership that we need right now in Jacksonville, as Jacksonville tries to grow, as he see it, as one city. And it's just disappointing in the type of leadership that was shown on yesterday. And I applaud Councilman Dennis for handling himself in the type of manner that he did. He was, to me, he was a very the type of leader that we all can be happy about, because he didn't go there acting out of character or anything like that. He put his welcome sign up. He welcomed the staff and anybody else from Sioux City Hall and the other councilmen from this district, and he handled it with dignity. And he made me proud as a resident on the north side. And I just feel that, you know, the type of politics that is being played by City Hall, you know, should be cut out. We should truly be one city if that's what the mayor wants us to be, and not single out anyone because you're having problems with the fact that he pushes back on some things or he questions some things.
Thank you for the call. Okay, Albert, I get you. Thank you for the call.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. But this is politics. It's not a tea society.
Have you seen the politics in tea societies?
Well, yeah, in churches too. You got a point there, Tim. I really, Mayor Curry has been criticized in the past for making Jacksonville even more partisan. And when he first became mayor, let's not forget,
he's the former chair of the state GOP.
That's right,
which was a partisan position.
And he did some purges of city committees, planning commission, and so forth when he first came in. Because he didn't agree with the politics of people who were on those boards. This is kind of his MO. And so far, you know, it's worked for him.
I think there's some amount of, you talk about coming in and dividing the city more, that there is some amount of people, you know, I said earlier that this is politics and people should not be, you know, amazed that people are throwing elbows. I think there's some amount, though, of all of the talk around one Jacksonville and we're all in this together, that then to have a, you know, very blatant, you know, message being sent by having an event like this doesn't seem to fit with that rhetoric. We're one Jacksonville, we're all doing this together.
Well, it was a good meeting of the mayor with the special needs kids, but one has to wonder, and it becomes just very obvious. This meeting could have been held downtown, the city council. It didn't have to be held over here at Vaughn McLaughlin, who's the pastor of that church that runs this restaurant. Just so everybody knows, it's one of two major restaurants that everybody goes to on Sunday after church. He didn't have to have it there, but this is part of the power play. This is not new. It's one Jack's one city my way. and that's what Mayor Curry is saying here. There was no need to do this sort of thing. And for the four councilmen, actually the three, Brown, and Gaffney in particular, who did this, we just talked about one councilman, one mayor siding with the Republican Party on this. I think the head of the Democratic Party was there yesterday and saw this blatancy. And it's just, you know, it's in your face. It's in your eye. Do it my way. Garrett, get in line. You've been saying that for
long.
And,
you know, when I saw the dust up over this, it reminded me of in the 90s when I was working in Chicago. It's sort of a mirror image of the politics here, where the Republican machine sort of runs everything. Well, of course, up in Cook County, Illinois, the Democratic machine runs everything. Well, in the mid-1990s, former Mayor Richard Daley wanted to close this small airport in Lake Michigan on this little island. It was called Meigs Field, and he wanted to turn it into a park. And the process wasn't moving fast enough for his liking. And some Chicago aldermen, they're the city council men of Chicago and women, some of them weren't rubber stamping his plans. Although, by and large, the aldermen of that city were a rubber stamp for him. But a few of them, every once in a while, would show a spine every once in a blue moon. And a few of them didn't like his plans. So what he did in the middle of the night, he ordered some city workers out to Migs Field with bulldozers in the middle of the night without any due process. And he had them bulldoze huge X's on the runways of Migs Field so that no planes could take off or land. And that was how he got his way. Okay. And the Chicago Tribune, which is a Republican-leaning paper and did not like Mayor Daley, called that move, you know, the most authoritarian, fascist-leaning, you know, overreach of his 22 years in the office. No term limits up there, at least there weren't back then. You know, that he would brook no disagreements, negotiations, or compromise, that, you know, it was his way or the highway.
And everybody understood that. Yeah.
And so the reason I tell this story is, whether it's Democratic machine politics or Republican machine politics, the strong mayor form of government can happen in both ecosystems.
Yep.
And it can lead to overreach, you know, and not necessarily good governance on both sides. That's why I tell that story.
Right. Well, let's flip the script. Let's say that Mayor Curry had this meeting yesterday to talk about Northwest Jacksonville. There are four district council members who represent North Jacksonville, including Garrett Dennis. He invited all four of them. They had a little news conference. They talked about all the great things. The message is, we don't agree on everything, but you know what? We agree on what needs to be done in Northwest Jacksonville. Instead, the message that came out of it is, one council member representing North Jacksonville was not invited. He comes there, makes his statements. It becomes a political issue. And so, you know, actions have reactions. Did Curry gain more by doing it this way? Well, there's going to be an election next year, and if it creates momentum for a Democratic candidate to decide to run, then he's got a contested election.
Okay, well, Lisa, speaking of which, Lisa King is on the line. She's the chair of the Duval Dems. Lisa, good morning.
Hey, Melissa. Hey, y'all. Good morning. Hey.
Go ahead.
Hey, well, you know, I fully agree with a lot that's been said. I mean, this mayor practices the politics of division. He's a bully in the age of Trump. He actually is a bit of a prodigy because his bullying behavior started before Trump was elected, with some of the examples that you gave, his purge of boards and commissions, how he spoke to members of the clergy in eye care and belittled people.
Well, let me just jump in. You're one of the people he purged. So are you, let me just say quickly, can you really be objective in saying this, Lisa, since you're one of the people he removed?
Yes, because I've been involved in politics my entire adult life. I have many, many friends who are Republican office holders who have treated me with kindness and respect. And it was not only the purge, it was the way the purge was handled. All right. You know, he did not show those people who had given hours and hours of their volunteer time because they care about the city any respect of that service. And it's just his style. And he tends to put the people around the table that give him the answer he wants, this whole Kids Help Alliance, the way that he excluded people who have been providing services to children in our community for decades. It's that kind of behavior, and now this. And it's childish. We're adults here, and we shouldn't treat each other like this, particularly in the age of Trump. We have to do better. And I hear everything you guys have said about machine politics and strong mayors. It doesn't make it right. And ultimately, great leaders lead from a place of love. This mayor leads from a place of fear, and it is not a sustainable or long-term effectiveness for our community in bringing people together in a community that is as diverse as Jacksonville.
All right, that's Lisa King calling in, chair of the Duval Democratic Party. Thanks for that call.
And as you heard, the mayor unwittingly, I think, has presented the local Democratic Party with a nice little issue. I'm sure that's not what he wanted to do, but they're going to, you know, Lisa and the rest of the Democratic Party in Duval County are going to paint this picture for the next, you know, till the next local election, and we'll see how much ice that cuts.
We're actually getting tweets about this. From Obi, I'm disappointed in the councilmen that agreed to be part of this. They end up not looking to their base as well to let the mayor use them as a prop.
Well, there's a question there, though. So you have four council people who did show up and one who was not invited. And I don't know. I wonder if the idea of, well, the base will rise up. I don't know. If you're being represented by one of those council people, you might be perfectly happy. Look, you know, they're getting along with the mayor. They're getting stuff done.
The problem is we don't know what they're getting done. Fair Washington enough. Heights is still Washington Heights. Yeah. Eureka Gardens has changed ownership, but some things are getting repaired, but it's still the same way. We have not gotten any movement on we've gotten pushback from the mayor's been moot on Walking While Black. The sheriff has downright opposed it and put out press releases in opposition to it when everybody knows what's at the core of that. Those are issues that are still on the table. And these councilmen have not done anything, have not said anything about it one way or the other. And next week, Garrett Dennis is holding a meeting on whether or not beginning the discussion, which we would think would come from the mayor's office, on whether we should sell the JEA or not.
Let's take one more call on this. This has turned into a bigger talking point than I thought it was going to be. Anna on the north side. Go ahead, Anna.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to make a brief comment that I agree with pretty much everything that you guys have said, but I wanted to address the councilman. The mayor is the mayor, and he has to do whatever he feels is best to do politically for him. But these councilmen represent people in communities, and that what they did was, I think, it was tacky and tasteless and very disrespectful to their brother council person. They should not have done that. And you can't say the mayor used them because they're adults. They allowed themselves. They wanted to be a part of that. He didn't twist their arm. I don't think he did. But they're adults, and they each got elected individually in their districts to represent those people in their districts. So if they didn't want to be a part of his play yesterday, they didn't have to be. And we have to hold them responsible. And that's my comment, and I'll listen off air.
Okay, thanks, Anna.
Well, let me push back on that a little bit. Just as the mayor is criticized for being highly partisan, why are we criticizing, three or four council people who are trying to work in a more partisan fashion with the mayor?
Because they should have had the meeting at City Hall, not at a place not at a public place where nobody knew what the agenda was, and it was clear to, and they're going to exclude a councilman that has the same problem in his district that all of them have. That's what makes this such, we go back.
But isn't the subtext of this, they should have stuck by Garrett Dennis, the African-American Democrat, rather than
be pawns.
Yeah.
Rather than the white Republican who's picking on.
That's the optics.
I mean, isn't that what
that's
the you're really saying?
Here. That's the optics. Divide and conquer. It just goes back. It's the same political game that we've seen before. It goes back to the point in time when Mayor Godbo came into office. And we had this division among African-American councilmen back then. At that point, former city councilman Harold Gibson was the outlier. And he eventually decided to challenge Mayor Godbo in the second term. And the other black councilmen at that point, with the exception of one, all of them sided with the mayor. And out of that, we got the appointment of Denise Lee to the city council. So, this is not new business, but it has happened with the strong mayor form of government.
Let's take one more call. Joe in Riverside.
Good morning, all, and thanks for the conversation. So one thing that I was thinking about was other people on council have respectfully disagreed with the mayor, and I haven't seen these kind of tactics and moves before. And so I'm wondering and thinking of some of the mayor's past campaign tactics, like darkening the complexion of African-American opponents or suppressing the Latino vote as the GOP party chair. Would he have done this kind of disrespect if it had been a white council member?
Well, it's hard to prove a hypothetical, Joe. Thanks for that call. And, you know, we've spent a lot of time on this point. We need to move on, actually, because we're almost out of time. And finally, we didn't even get to all the other points from the week, like felony voting rights, opioids, a private school closing in town. This thing blew up, my goodness. But we do need to take a look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from around the state this week. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. And only in Florida does someone donate a loaded grenade launcher to Goodwill. At least it wasn't in Garrett Dennis's district, Fred. Manatee County deputies responded to an incident where a loaded grenade launcher was found at a Goodwill store. They say it was left with other donated items just kind of regularly. They disposed of it in a hazmat locker and stored it in the agency's property room. I guess they can make use of it. And,
they're supposed to sell stuff to raise money for people in need. What?
I know.
Stored in property room.
I know. And only in Florida do guys get busted for working out naked at the gym. Now, sadly, I've seen a picture of this man, and of course, he isn't the kind of naked guy you would hope would be working out naked at the gym. Police arrested. Police arrested Kerry Haynes after his fellow tenants complained about him repeatedly working out in the nude.
Keyword there is repeatedly.
Repeatedly. At the community gym at his apartment complex in Orlando, apparently Haynes's favorite workout was the stationary bike. Now, I'm not a guy, but that's you guys tell me, that does not sound very comfortable to me.
That's the saying, how's it hanging, fella?
No, David Bauerlein, you've been so quiet. Comment from David Bauerlein on any of this.
And his stock has gone way up.
Thank you so much to all of you, David Bauerlein, John Burr, Tim Gibbons, and Fred Matthews. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We'll be
Thanks.
Right back.
Bye-bye.
Across is a particularly good pile of junk, and I know it's a good pile because my mom always had a saying. My mom, every time you come across like a good pile, she'd always be like, she'd look at me and be like, sometimes it pays to be poor.
Join us for stories of bravery, longing, and the awkwardness of being an adolescent. That's on the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Join us Sunday nights for fresh programming beginning at 9 with On the Beam with me, David Luckin, as we spotlight music from the 30s and 40s.
I'm on the beam, time's flying by.
Followed by Taste Test with host Damian Lamar presenting Urban Radio After Dark.
There is a place that I'm saving.
On the Beam and Taste Test, Sunday nights at 9, only on 89.9 FM. Your community, your world, your music.
We'll meet again. It's a series of stories about people who are separated by events in history, who are looking for the person who helped them survive. When you get to witness these reunions and talk to these people, there's a real tenderness.
Mary Frances?
Raker!
Look at you!
Wouldn't we all wish that someone would come to us and say, you did something deeply meaningful, and it changed the course of my life.
Good to see you.
Tuesday night at 8 on WJCT Public Television.
WJCT offers a 24-hour classical music service dedicated to live classical music programming 24 hours a day. To find out more, visit us at wjct.org/hd.
Welcome back. Well, today is National Wear Red Day. Just by wearing red, you can start the conversation about heart health, and women can lead by example. Wear red and make time to know your numbers. That's knowledge that can save your life. Cardiologist Dr. Sabrina Phillips of Mayo Clinic and Darnell Smith, market president from Florida Blue, are here with more about National Wear Red Day and National Heart Month. It's February. Hey, good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Dr. Phillips, you're wearing red. You look beautiful.
Thank you.
And we wear red today as a way to raise awareness about risk factors for heart disease, particularly for women. You want women to know their numbers. What numbers?
Right. Well, there are five numbers that if you know, you can impact your heart health in a very positive manner. And they're silent things. So it's not something necessarily that you would know just by walking around. So you need to know your total cholesterol. You need to know the fraction of your cholesterol that's considered the good cholesterol or HDL. You need to know your blood pressure, you need to know your blood sugar, and you need to know your body mass index. Mm-hmm. Those five numbers are super important in terms of evaluating your risk for developing vascular disease, and important to treat those numbers if needed to reduce your risk.
And lower your blood pressure, lose weight, exercise, eat healthy, lower your salt intake, lower your alcohol intake. And Darnell Smith, there is a new program from the American Heart Association and Florida Blue. You guys are offering a free online tool for people to help with all of this, right?
Absolutely. And I think the good doctor would probably tell you that there's a new study out that shows there's, I think, 46%, if I'm not mistaken, Dr. Phil?
Yes, that's correct.
Folks in America have high blood pressure. And so this is indeed something that's extremely important. So we do have a change control tracker where we are working with American Heart Association to ensure that people are getting an opportunity to get a chance to check their blood pressure at least twice a month and put it online, and we'll give you the kind of information you need to make certain that indeed you're getting better.
You can just go to a Florida Blue Center and do this for free, right? Or you could do it online as well? Or how
you can do it online. And so we will be having events at the three centers. You'll notice that we have one in Riverside in the YMCA. We have another that is in the River City Marketplace. And then we have one out in the town center. And so there are three events. One will begin February 5th from 11:30 to 1 p.m. And then April 2nd, same time frame, 11:30 to 1 p.m. And then May 7th, 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. And they each have different event titles in which we focus on different aspects of how people can get better.
Very nice. So this first one then, Doctor, coming up Monday, and featuring physicians from Mayo Clinic.
Yes, that's correct. And so take advantage of any opportunity that you have, whether it's one of these events or making an appointment with your primary care physician. Find out what your blood pressure is, because learning your blood pressure, it's silent. You don't know if it's elevated. Find out what it is. Find out if you need treatment with medication or if you need just lifestyle modification, which can be powerful in preventing and lowering your blood pressure.
People don't realize nearly 50% of all Americans have high blood pressure. I didn't realize it was that high.
Yes, that's correct. So the new guidelines, which have been in the news lately, have shown that we should really consider high blood pressure to be 130 over 80 or higher. And the reason for that is studies across populations in America have shown that there is an increasing risk above those numbers for vascular disease. And importantly, if you lower those numbers, you reduce your risk of a vascular event. That's both heart attack and stroke. And so you can lower this both by lifestyle changes or medication. It doesn't mean you have to have medication necessarily.
All
if
right.
you have one of these numbers.
It's National Wear Red Day. Come on out to the St. John's Town Center Monday to meet with Florida Blue and Mayo Clinic. Lower your blood pressure. It can save your life. Dr. Phillips of Mayo Clinic, one of my favorite people here as well, Darnell Smith with Florida Blue. Almost out of time. You want to say something really quickly?
Yes, we ask folks to please go and sign up for the tracker online, www.cccTracker.com, /AHA/FloridaBlue. Every letter is lowercase.
All right. Thank you both so much. And in a moment, Donna Deegan joins us.
President Trump asks Congress to restrict U.S. foreign aid to America's friends. Kenyans watch their TVs go blank as confusion grows over who's president. And who will inherit the Flatpak fortune? IKEA's founder leaves behind a huge legacy and a few confusing instructions. The Global Edition of the Friday News Roundup next time on 1A. weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, the directors of two Oscar-nominated films. Greta Gerwig made her directing debut with Lady Bird, which is up for 5 Oscars, including Best Picture and Directing. Dee Reese's film Mudbound has 4 nominations, including Cinematography and Adapted Screenplay. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup, a live call-in program where you talk about the biggest stories in the state.
This Friday, we'll tell you why Florida lawmakers are taking up the controversial debate over sanctuary cities. Also, why the state is closing down a foreclosure fund with millions of dollars still unspent.
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Fridays at 1 on WJCT.
I'm Ira Flato. China is the world's number one carbon polluter, but it's also a world leader in clean energy and electric vehicles.
I think they want to own the global electric car market because they realize how big it can be and how fast it can grow.
We talk China's green energy future. Plus, what could be bad about more bees? The good and the bad of honeybee conservation. All on Science Friday from PRI.
Fridays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, it's one of the most popular marathons in the country, and it's run right here on the First Coast. The annual 26.2 with Donna raises funds for breast cancer research, and it also helps local women dealing with the disease. 1 in 8 women in this country will develop invasive breast cancer in her life. Aubrey Thompson, PhD from Mayo Clinic, another Mayo doctor on the show, joins us. And we're pleased to welcome as well the one and only Donna Deegan. Good morning to you both.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Oh, we're so glad to have you both. I can't believe it's that time of year again. You started this how many years ago? My goodness. And, well, and I've seen the signs all around town.
The foundation in 2003 and then the marathon in 2008.
Amazing.
So
10 years.
11 years. Listen, 11,000 families we've been able to help.
How about that?
Yeah. Amazing. So we're really excited about that. Plus all the research that's going on. It's just been a wonderful, wonderful, invigorating experience,
indeed,
hasn't it?
Absolutely.
And Dr. Thompson, the partnership with Mayo Clinic is so important. The research that's being done at Mayo Clinic, of course, Donna's marathon helps your research. What can you share about Mayo's role in advancing the cause of life-saving research for women with breast cancer?
Well, I think fundamentally we have a very, very strong team of researchers, breast cancer researchers at Mayo Clinic. A lot of the clinical practice and a lot of the research activities that go on at the clinic are organized around breast cancer and directed towards finding out the causes of breast cancer and working on new cures and new treatments. And quite simply, the 26.2 with Donna has been a huge factor in our ability to make, I think, some very exciting advances and that are ultimately going to reduce breast cancer mortality.
Well, actually, I was in the lab yesterday and in talking with some of those lead researchers that work with Dr. Thompson, and I interviewed the very first woman to enroll in our triple negative breast cancer trial. And she's so excited. And she said, you know, it's just so cool to be able to be on the cutting edge of breast cancer research that actually could at some point help us to eliminate chemotherapy.
Really?
Right? I mean, wouldn't that be amazing eventually,
yes,
if we could eliminate chemotherapy?
And
I said, what's the worst side effect from the vaccine? Oh, maybe a little bit of redness like you'd get with a flu vaccine. That's the worst side effect you're going to get. So it's really cool. And she says, it's just great to know that we're doing that right here in Jacksonville, right?
Yeah.
And all over the country, really. But this is where we began it. This is where it started.
Now, as rates of breast cancer continue to decline and research moves ahead, one thing that you're doing with the marathon is not only helping Dr. Thompson's work, you're helping local women, some of whom might need help covering insurance costs, other costs. That's another way that people that participate in the marathon, they can help with that aspect of your work as well.
Absolutely. As I mentioned, we've helped over 11,000 families now. And what's cool, Melissa, is that we have a new partnership that we started last year with the Patient Advocate Foundation, where we connect people not only financially with things that we've always done, like their mortgage and their co-pays and their child care and all those things they need. But now they're connected with a caseworker who can say, you know what, if you have confusion over insurance, or if you'd like to find another grant to help you pay for your medications, or if you'd like to, they can lead. So for every $1 that we collect with the Donna Foundation, now we return $5 more of service to people. So it's really wonderful to be able to do that, because so much confusion comes along with a breast cancer diagnosis. And so these days, not only can we help financially, but we can help sort of eradicate some of the confusion around and the fear that comes with breast cancer diagnosis.
The marathon is not this weekend, right? But next weekend.
It is next weekend. And for the first time ever, we actually are able to keep registration open all the way through Saturday. So for folks who want to run the 5K or the 10K or the half marathon relay, full marathon, whatever it is, you can register all the way up until next Saturday on breastcancermarathon.com and help us to end breast cancer and to help all those people that really do need the help.
It's out at the beaches. You don't have to run. Dr. Thompson, you can walk too. You can be part of this in all kinds of ways. Are you?
What would make you assume that I couldn't run?
No, I don't mean you personally.
Doesn't he have a great voice for radio, by the way? Shouldn't he be on the radio?
I didn't mean you.
One can also do a number of things, including volunteer.
Right.
You can stand there and pass out water to the thirsty people.
And as Donna said, you have until next Saturday.
Right. And the 5K and 10K are downtown at the Prime Osborne Convention Center, and the 1 Mile Family Fun Run, which are a great thing for families to get involved with, all sorts of fun entertainment. The expo is free, all kinds of booths and things to get involved with. And then the marathon and half marathon and relay are Sunday.
It's awesome. It's an awesome event.
Go to breastcancermarathon.com, breastcancermarathon.com. The National Marathon to Finish Breast Cancer, created by Jacksonville's...
We're getting there, baby.
Jacksonville's own Donna Deegan, the one and only, what a great citizen of this city she is. Donna, always so good to see you. Dr. Aubrey Thompson with Mayo Clinic. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you. That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. If you missed anything this morning, our rebroadcast is tonight at 8. And don't forget to join us at 1 o'clock this afternoon for our new statewide show, the Florida Roundup, taking calls all across the state from the biggest stories of the week. 1A is up next, and I'm Melissa Ross with First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.